for a moment you cannot know who you are in whatever role you're playing in that moment. So right now, we are in this moment. If none of us, just for this moment, knows how to play this role of this Leela, of this theater, of this play, and is just open to discover what is the truth that can use this setup, these forms, these words, these conversations in the most authentic way, so that the role itself points to truth. The alive, creative, inconceivable truth. So that the role points to the truth of who you are.
Hello and welcome to Being Yourself, Self-Inquiry with Gangaji. My name is Barbara Denenpont, and I have a very special guest here with me today. Before we share a really great clip from the archives with Gangaji, Hilary Larson is here to share with us some of her experience as she's just very recently returned from the Amazon. Hil, it's so nice to have you back in Ashland, to have you here.
Oh, so good to be back.
You are my podcast mentor. You have taught me all things podcast. For those of you who may not have ever met Hil, she's played many roles here at the Gangaji Foundation as an event coordinator was the first role. And also, though, she brought us into this whole world of podcasting with a conversation with Gangaji and Epiphany. If you haven't heard those programs before, I encourage you to go onto iTunes or just onto the website to check them out. So you've just come back from the Amazon. You've been traveling the world, but I really wanted to take a moment and hear from you about this trip you've just had and what it meant to you.
Well, I think what leads up to that, as people that are familiar with a conversation with Gangaji know, that after 6 years, the show ended in a way that was super organic and expected but unexpected in a certain way. And the last episode we did was called Finding Home. And it was really interesting to me and humbling to me that a conversation with Gangaji started off in my mind of me interviewing Gangaji, but it thoroughly and completely was satsang. And as I let go of my interview role and just became myself is when I had my deeper realization. And I didn't know exactly what I was going to do after a conversation with Gangaji. And it's partially why this conversation between you and I is relevant, particularly when we think about the clip, because I wasn't in that role anymore. And I had to look at how over the years I had to let go of that role to actually be myself. And so what happened was I really allowed myself to open into the unknown. And part of that opening resulted in me going deep into the Amazon rainforest. And if you would have asked me before that, if that was on my bucket list, if it was something that I always wanted to do, I would have said, no, no, it wasn't that I didn't want to go. I just didn't have a plan for it. It wasn't on the top of my list. And it was as surprising to me as how doing a conversation with Gangaji was, that kind of fell from the sky in a moment of openness.
And what was your experience? Maybe paint a little picture for us of your trip down to the Amazon.
Well, the sequence of it was that I was invited by a woman named Lynn Twist, who has since done some incredible consulting for the prison program. She's an amazing human being. She wrote a book called The Soul of Money. She, along with two amazing co-facilitators, Sarah Vetter and Carolyn Buckloose, put together this group of women called the Remarkable Women, Remarkable Women's Journey. And it was just 10 women. And part of it was to go into the heart of the rainforest in Ecuador to the headwaters of the Amazon. And what I realized immediately was, first of all, I talked about Gangaji a lot because everything I experienced there really was a reflection of her teachings. And it was one of those moments of, or moment after moment of realization that I was seemingly far away from the Gangaji Foundation and Gangaji, and yet I felt like Gangaji's in my cells. And so over and over again, it was about opening to the, seriously to the unknown, you know, floating down a river, one of the tributaries of the Amazon, to be flying over the canopies in these little planes. And so I felt like it was a teaching for me about home.
When you were flying over the canopy of the Amazon, what was your experience of that? What was happening in the middle of that?
Only four people could fit in the plane, and then the pilot. And they were these little tiny planes, and we had to, theoretically, what's supposed to happen is they weigh your bag, they weigh you with your bag. They have to be really careful about how much weight they put on the plane. And we were trying to dodge between rainstorms, so they just said, get on the plane. So we ended up taking off in these little tiny planes. And once we were over the rainforest, I checked to see if fear was here, because every once in a while this alarm would go off in the plane. And it sounded alarming. It sounded like a bad sign. And I would check to see if there was fear present. And there was no fear present. I did have people say to me before I went, their first reaction was like, whoa, that sounds dangerous. And I did redo my will before I left.
Good plan.
But I wasn't afraid. I don't think I was ever afraid. And that surprised me, because I used to have a horrible panic disorder before I met Gangaji, and leaving my house seemed impossible some days. So to be flying over the rainforest of the Amazon, not really even knowing where I was going, because I didn't really even need to check and see what was ahead, was quite extraordinary.
And that experience of the unknown, especially in the midst of this incredible being of the rainforest, it sounds like it just was filled with wonder more than anything.
It was, somebody asked me, when you say it was all a reflection of Gangaji's teaching, what does that mean? And it was almost like if you took diamond in your pocket and combined everything, it was all of that. It wasn't just one thing. But I did feel there was a way I was still reaching for something outside myself at some point. I really recognized that. And we were doing a ceremony with these incredible shamans, really learning from their great ancient lineage. And I could feel myself reaching for an experience. And we did an ayahuasca ceremony, which is actually something that I didn't think I would do for various reasons. But I was hoping for something. I was hoping that I would have this expansive moment, or I would, you know, some people have visions of flying over the rainforest or morphing into different things. And I didn't have any of that. And so there was a moment where I opened to the disappointment of that, the self-judgment of that. And then I realized in this instant, and it was so subtle I could have overlooked it. And what it was this recognition that I was overlooking my own life.
Wow.
And I looked up at the stars, because you're on the equator and the stars feel like they're right in front of your face. And I was like, I almost missed that. I almost missed my life. And there was so much love present. And I think before I met Gangaji, and honestly for a long time, even while I was doing the radio show, I feel like I was waiting for something big to happen, something that happened to her maybe would happen to me. And that was distracting me from my own moment.
And from yourself.
And from myself.
Well, that's so crucial, because that is the overlooking of what's right here, what's already here. And that, of course, then ties back totally to finding home. I mean, that's what that is to see right where you are. Wow.
Yeah. So surprising. And I did bring that narrative, Finding Home. Gangaji had done an incredible monologue for one of her With Gangaji webcasts 2.5 years ago. And I brought that with me. Mm. And when I was done, when we left the rainforest, all of these amazing women, we sat in a circle and we were trying to encapsulate what it was that had transformed for us. And I didn't have any other words. And so I pulled out my, happened to have it on my iPhone, and I read the narrative to Finding Home. And I barely got through it because I just wanted to sob. And I don't know if we can make that available. It actually will be available as a film soon.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'll see why. I'm sure everybody who's familiar with Gangaji will recognize those words that just resonate to the core. And actually, in hindsight, it was my purpose in going, was to validate that Finding Home.
That's so beautiful, Hill. Because there is a way, and I think that's part of what this whole particular clip that I pulled out of the archives is, it is about, there's all the roles we play and all the different roles that you've played over your life in ways that maybe you didn't even expect to find yourself in the role of flying over the Amazon and becoming a filmmaker and doing things that you perhaps many years ago never expected. But some of this conversation is then about when we're willing not to know what we're then available for. When you came back, you shared with me this aspect of what it has meant in your life not to suffer, not to carry on with unnecessary suffering. Can you share a little bit about that with everybody?
I think hand in hand with the conversation about finding home is this question about the unknown and availability. And I have dove a little bit deeper into the chaos that's on this planet right now. I mean, it's extraordinary when people talk about facing the sixth extinction. I mean, that's a reality. It may seem like some of us are removed from it in a particular way, but when your face is right up against it, it's...
You mean in terms of being in the Amazon right in the thrust of it and the fires that were happening?
Yeah, the fires, the seeing what the oil companies have done. So there was this openness in going in the first place and leaving my role with the Gangaji Foundation, which I dearly, dearly loved. And over time, over 2 or 3 or 4 years, I'd have to say, I got so tired of listening to my inner dialogue. It was almost like I drank myself to death. And even being around Gangaji, it was like, she likes me, she doesn't like me. It's like, that was a good show, it was a bad show. I did well, I did, I mean, it's just like, rah! And it was almost a kind of feast that I indulged in so deeply that at a certain point, I reached this point of disillusionment. And then I was open. Finally, I was open. And so then I had said to Gangaji, I feel like I'm actually available now for inquiry. I thought I was before, but I wasn't because I was so busy listening to the conversations in my head about what I thought, how things should be or how I wanted them, even though I was also fairly content at the same time, but I would dip into these, listening to these conversations. And so this availability then leads to, what can I do for this earth? How do I contribute to this, you know, one of a kind place on earth and this humanity that could come and go? What's my place in that? And Gangaji talked about that in that small group retreat, about this willingness to just not know what our role is. And then the question is just about being available. And I love that. It's so meaningful what can happen if you truly not try to figure something out, not try to figure life out.
To really let your life be used.
Yeah.
But it is essential. The stopping is essential in that. The stopping, figuring it out. And that can be a really challenging, frightening place. The idea of the fear of not knowing, I should say, is a powerful one. And so often we're trying to get to a certain place, trying to be a certain way and be something in particular. And actually, one of the reasons I liked the title for this podcast to be Being Yourself is that's what it finally comes down to simply being yourself. And how we discover that and how we show up in that is so much of what this teaching, this offering is about. Because if we're trying to fix it or be something in particular, we've really overlooked what's already here and what's fully available to us and how we can be fully available.
When you had first asked me if I'd be willing to do this podcast, my first thought was like, oh my God, who's going to want to listen to my story without Gangaji being across the table for me? And I think that when I finally surrendered, I realized just that I also needed to open to that, because I was in a very unique position being able to sit across from Gangaji for 6 years. And that in the midst of that, sometimes people would make assumptions that because I was able to be close to her, that my life was easier. And in a certain way, I'd have to say that was true. But if I really, 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 really wanted to be free, I was going to have to let go of that too. Mm. So I think that that is part of the purpose of this story of what happened after a conversation with Gangaji, because anything can be a source of disillusionment in the best way possible. And for me, a conversation with Gangaji was a source of disillusionment in a way I could never have expected a grace like that.
Yeah, that's how it reveals itself. That's for sure. And, you know, if why not you? You know, why me? Why not you? It's really, here we are. So this seems like a really perfect moment to play the clip from Gangaji. And I'll just mention that at the end of the clip, Hillary is going to share a special invitation with you. So you ready, Hill?
Ready.
Let's take a listen.
I never really know what I'm going to say when one of these meetings occurs. We've been meeting together, a lot of us, for a long time now, years. 14 years this month since Papaji sent me to meet you and to offer to you what he offered to me. And really, the fact that I never exactly know what I'm going to say is the essence of the teaching. Because if what I have to say could be memorized or put on note cards or remembered, then it's not really the teaching. It's not really what's offered. I'm playing the role of the teacher here. You're playing the role of the student in this moment, or maybe the anti-student who's in the room with a teacher, a so-called teacher. So that there's that spectrum. Those are roles we play. And we all of us play many roles in our lives. Roles of parent or roles of child, lover, friend, husband, wife, worker, quitter, victorious one, defeated one, sick one, healthy one, living one, dying one, and many, many small subtext. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just the play. We are in this multidimensional, extraordinary, awesome play. And it requires each of us within the cosmos that each of us lives in to play all the roles of the play, in the play. And we learned this very early as children, just like other primates learn very early by imitation, by association, by modeling. I know that many of you who are mothers can recall a moment in raising your child where you realized, oh my God, I'm saying exactly what my mother said. I'm being her, the person you swore you would never be. Generally, you swear you'll never be your mother. And you discover that there's this role of motherhood that you have taken on to play based on the modeling of your mother. Same with a wife. I can remember after my first marriage failed and I was getting ready to marry again, and all of a sudden we started treating each other very differently. And we both realized we were treating each other like we thought a husband treated a wife and a wife treated a husband, which is why both of our marriages had failed. So we called the marriage off and didn't marry for another 13 years after that. So if I go back to the motherhood example or the parent example, there's a moment then where you say, well, I can't be my mother. She was a horrible parent, or my father, or I didn't like the way I was parented. And then there's a searching for someone you can be like. So, you know, I grew up in the 50s, so there were models for what mothers were like, and then I tried to be a mother like that. It's impossible, because it was a one-dimensional view. And you can't just be a perfect mother all the time, because you're a multidimensional person, and it's a multidimensional role. So at some point, I had to say, you know what, I don't know how to be a mother. I have no idea how to be a mother. I have lots of ideas of what a good mother is and what a bad mother is, but I have no idea how to be a mother. And in that, as in any good role or any good actor's part, you can discover within you what is the way you can be a mother. Or a father, or a husband, or a wife, or a friend, or a teacher, or a student. Just like an actor, a real actor, where it's art, not just some imitation, has to discover the truth of that, not the falseness of the role, but the truth of the role, the authenticity of the role, the creative mothering or parenting or teaching or learning or being friends, being a person. And this is radical. This means that for a moment you cannot know who you are in whatever role you're playing in that moment. So right now, we are in this moment. If none of us, just for this moment, knows how to play this role of this lila, of this theater, of this play, and is just open to discover what is the truth that can use this setup, these forms, these words, these conversations, in the most authentic way, so that the role itself points to truth. The alive, creative, inconceivable truth. So that the role points to the truth of who you are. When we see great art, whether it's painting or we hear music or see acting or dancing, we are thrilled by it if we recognize it to be art, if it touches some part in us that resonates with something that is there and alive, but we didn't quite know it before. It wasn't known, it wasn't stored in the memory, it wasn't conceived. It hadn't happened before. That's the authenticity that we call art. But most of us have decided that we aren't artists because our drawing is not good, or our paintings are not good, or musicians because we're limited in our talents or capacities. But all of us are people. And as people, as individuals, there is within each of us the same spark that gives rise to art. Each of us has a talent to be a unique, authentic being whose uniqueness and whose authenticity and whose beingness points and is an expression of the universality of all being, the truth of being, the truth of who you are. My teacher's teacher, who is Ramana Maharshi, used self-inquiry. Who are you? Who is playing the role? Who is the mother? Who is the father? Who is the student? Who is the teacher? To point the mind back into the formless presence of alive inconceivability. Not so that that could be some kind of who am I, who is the teacher, who is the student, who is, but so that the life could be lived in the full expression without needing to know what that expression is, or even the effect of that expression. Are you following me? It's not too abstract. I have my Geiger counters here to go. Too abstract, not too abstract. So that's what our point is here today. To first recognize that there are a multitude of roles, many seconds of roles, that have all been conditioned and digested to such a degree that they're unconscious. They just seem to be who you are. But if there's a willingness to recognize everything that you do, if you have any idea of how to do that, or even what that is you are doing in the moment, it's coming from something past, which can be quite useful, obviously. You don't need to relearn the alphabet every time you write a word, or relearn your multiplication tables, or relearn how to drive, or relearn how to work a computer. It's very useful. The only problem with it is if you believe the roles to be the truth of who you are. Then when you are playing the role of sick person or you're playing the role of healthy person, you make an evaluation about who you are on the role, based on the role. I'm a healthy person, I'm good. I'm a sick person, I'm bad, or the world's bad, or the world's good. If you can recognize that it's all a role, a multidimensional, exquisite, mysterious, cosmic, mundane, transcendent, profane totality of theater. We can call it divine theater. Then there is the opportunity, the possibility, the space to recognize what is present in all roles. What doesn't move as the movement of play occurs? What is the truth of who you are? And my teacher asked me to stop everything when I met him. And it took me some time to even get what he was talking about. I thought he meant stop moving. It was a much deeper request. Stop everything. What he was saying is stop every role you're playing. And the role I was playing then was the very intent seeker role. I am seeking enlightenment. And that's a beautiful role. That's an exquisite role. It's a mysterious role when you're asked to play that role. And maybe you even fight with it. Not you. I mean, it's a weird role to most people in the world. It's not a normal role. But somehow, everyone in this room, to some degree, was asked to play that. So I recognized the beauty of it, and I had actually gotten quite good at perfecting it. I knew the clothes to wear. I knew the demeanor to put on. I knew the words to say. I knew my meditations. I knew my failures in it. I knew my successes in it. And I was seeking more information about the role. And so I went to a master of enlightenment, thinking he would give me more information so I could be the enlightened one or the supreme seeker of the enlightened one. Always happy, always giving out beauty and love. It sounds good. It's like, you know, the understudy, the brilliant understudy that one day will be called to play the role. And he told me to stop everything. And when it finally sunk in, he means everything. Really, everything. Then there was a point of meeting. A point where our eyes met, where our minds were open to one another, where our hearts were beating in love, where there was nothing in the way of one-to-one, oneself to one another. And what occurs in a true meeting where there is no conception of what is occurring is the truth of who you are. It is an exquisite experience. And the tendency is to try to capture that experience and to hold it. But my teacher said, stop everything, even that. Don't hold this. Don't hold that. Don't keep this. Don't keep that away. Don't be this. Don't be that. Just be. And I thought that meant retreat to India, live at his feet, never play any of my other roles again. And he told me to stop that also, as he put me on a plane back to you and invited me to play this role. Not to play it 24 hours a day, just to play it when it occurs. And to always tell the truth in the playing of who one is. So that is the essence of the teaching. The play of the teaching is discovering how it is we conceptualize what it is we are looking for, what it is we love, what it is we know to be true. And those are our conversations. Those are our dances together. Those are our words. Those are our roles. When you receive the transmission of this teaching, however you receive it, through a look, through a word, TV screen, through nature, the mystery of no event occurring, it doesn't matter. Whenever you receive the transmission, at that point, there is choice in your life. Before that, there's no choice. It's all just mechanical play, robots playing. But at that point, there is choice. Not choice based on I know, but choice based on I don't know. I don't know. Not I know that I don't know. That's too much. That's another role. A deeper, truer, more alive, I don't know. Which then led into the second part of his teaching, which was wait and see. Stop, wait and see. Very simple. Endless. Of course, it requires an enormous amount of trust. Because all that we think we are, all the roles we have played or we have seen played in our parents or our leaders or our teachers or our advertisements or movies or all that we have put into ourselves, all that we have said, no, never that. We all sense that that's there. And the fear is that if we wait and see, what we will see will be very bad news. Because we've played the role of being nice and wonderful and lovely, but we know inside there's a wretched, horrible, ugly, mean-spirited person who does selfish, greedy, lustful things. Not like everybody else. Or the reverse, depending on if you're inflated with yourself, then you think everybody else does that, not like you. Any of those in here? Because generally, I'm speaking to people who have learned to be humble and in that have learned to hate themselves for their arrogance or for their parts of themselves that slip by the humility. So it requires a huge amount of trust, a leap into not knowing. And I'm here to tell you that it is very good news. As my teacher's presence was telling me, it's very good news. As Ramana's presence, as the moment of not knowing, your own presence is saying, this is good news. If in not knowing, you're not seeking to know, if you stop. Okay, as for all the people I've never met before, are there any in here if I've never met you before? And it's also for all the people that I have met who think they know what I'm saying. And it's for me because it's my joy to come here naked of knowing what to say and trusting that I don't need to know that the role itself was given for a specific purpose, and that purpose is the awakening of all being. And that if the mind surrenders to that, then the mind is used in a way I don't need to know. And that's what I invite you to.
Well, I find that totally flattening. Like, I find it so moving simply because I know the impact that her life has had on my life, and that her willingness to surrender, that what she's speaking about, her willingness to really not know where this would take her, what it would mean to her life. The gratitude that I feel in this moment just listening to that is so powerful. And what an opening, what an invitation to all of us to be willing to play the role that is given.
Years ago, I was, I just was debilitated with anxiety, and I was doing my life on the outside, but on the inside, I didn't want people to know how horrendous it was. And I remember standing in my bedroom one day, this was probably 20 years ago, and I made a deal with God. And I said to God, if you get me out of this, I promise you, I will help as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. And so over time, I've helped people in different ways, and people have helped me in different ways. And I think the first person on that list was Gangaji. And so when I got out of the rainforest, I was trying to figure out how to express that. And a month and a half after I got out of the rainforest, I was invited down to San Francisco for a gathering for an organization that's working day and night to save the rainforest. And one of the co-leaders is Lynn Twist. And she was giving us an update on the fires in Brazil. And this wasn't long ago. It was after the cameras were off, so to speak. There were still 5,000 fires in Brazil. And she was really talking about the extraordinary moment we're in right now with so many species dying and going extinct. And, you know, the CO2 levels at highs that are at an unknown place too. We've never been here before. And then she said something that encapsulated or articulated what it was I was feeling. And that was, she said, in the midst of this crisis, it's more important now than ever that we have a place to go to where we remember who we are, mm-hmm. where we're reminded who we are. And I was sitting there thinking, that's it. That's what I was trying to say. So for me, this finding home is on so many levels, but I first discovered home, even the echo of home, when I first was connected with Gangaji. So for me, that conduit was a book, and then it was a public access, and then it was the website, and then it was seeing her in person. And I was so clear on a deeper level, I want to give to that. So it combines my deal with God with this wanting to support all being. If the voice of Gangaji resonates in that way, then that's what I want to serve. So I contacted you all and I said, I want to do a matching grant for the end of the year to help support the ongoing expansion of the Gangaji Foundation, the prison program, scholarships that people even can go to the website, that people can go to retreats. This retreat that I went to recently, there were several people that said when they walked in the door, they felt like they were home. Mm-hmm. And I was just, yeah, I want to serve that. And the other thing on top of it, just to talk about something that I feel like is somewhat separated from a spiritual conversation per se, is, you know, over the years, I've heard people talk about money. And I've heard sometimes it put in a spiritual context of like, well, money is energy. And I was realizing through my time with these remarkable women that I had been hiding from that, that money itself is just something we project onto. So we've seen how money can be projected as corruption and greed and hatred and destruction, and it can be projected as love. And so why would I hide from that? So everything switched for me 180 degrees, and it was like, yeah, I want to stand for that.
And putting our energy, our time, our expertise, our resources, our money toward those things really does make a difference, because we both know that there's somebody's shoulders that we're standing on. I met Gangaji in 93, and I know that there were people that were making things happen and have made things happen over many, many years. And so I'm just so appreciative to you, Hill, for so much that you have given and made available to people. I don't know if people know that this podcast gets downloaded like 10,000 times uniquely, you know, individuals, 10,000 people that connect with this podcast and connected with your podcast and how you built that. And you created this foundation and this this vehicle for people to be able to find or catch what this invitation is, and so that they can discover who they are in truth, and that they can be free and not have to suffer unnecessarily. There is a great quote. You're reminding me of a great quote that I'm really paraphrasing, where Gangaji said, in that moment of ending your own unnecessary suffering, you're just one less screaming, crying child on Mother Earth, you know, that your realization of who you are serves something that you can absolutely not know. You cannot know the import of that or the meaning of that in a very direct way, but you can have the experience of that, and we absolutely see the ripple of it, of an individual life. Who knows where life is going to take you in this next step? You know, who knows where, how life will reveal itself and the different roles you will play, but you know what you love and what you support. And I thank you. There's so many. Thank you for your friendship. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your contributions and your passion and your, you know, I can't tell you how deeply meaningful it is to me personally as the role I play as executive director. It means the world. And I know that there are people who are listening to this right now whose life you touched. And I really want to thank you for making this grant available, and just to let people know that what Hillary's really offering is, she's raised, with a few friends, she's raised $22,000. And we're going to be matching all the monthly donors. Every new monthly donor, every new pledge increase is going to be matched. And what I love about it is that it just brings us together. And it isn't about the amount. It finally isn't about the amount. It's really, it just brings us together to be able to help each other and support each other in making this invitation available to anybody who is interested. It isn't about proselytizing. It isn't about, it's for those who truly want to discover who they are. So thank you, Hill.
When I was listening to you, I was feeling so humble because I've received so much more than I've given. Even in this context, I've received so much more than I've given. And that, you know, I'm a work in progress. I am not cured of anything. I still have a racing mind, and I still start to chew on leather, but I put it down so much more quickly than I used to. And this thing about this moment in time is so relevant to me, that this is a place where we can be reminded of who we are, and then everything else can go from there. But my gratitude for you and for Gangaji and the Gangaji Foundation, everybody associated with the Gangaji Foundation, could never be spoken. Mm.
Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Hill. Thank you again. And for those of you who would like to participate in the matching grant, I invite you to visit the website gangaji.org. That's GANGAJI.org. Just click on the donate page, and all the information is there for you to make a donation and to find out what you're really supporting, what you're giving to. You can also find out more about Gangaji's in-person retreats, her online meetings, and the various programs that are available to you and to others. It's been a deep pleasure for me to be here with Hillary today. And of course, as always, it is a great pleasure and privilege for me to be with everyone. Thank you for listening. Until next time.